but Glenda outshone them all without trying. The name of the Egyptian queen Nefertiti means both beautiful and good, all in one word. I think that explains Glenda. She got up from her great book of records, where she spends most of her time, and glided toward us. Kissed Hilda first, kissed me, and said, "Welcome home, Didi." And I was so choked up I couldn't talk. I just curtsied. She offered a hand each to Zebediah and Pop while greeting them. They bowed simultaneously and kissed her hands. She waved at chairs that hadn't been there a moment before and invited us to sit down. Zebediah whispered to me out of the side of his mouth, "You seem to own this place."
"Not really," I whispered back. "But I guess I've lived in Oz longer than anywhere else." Which was true. Mama and Pop lived at several campuses while I was growing up, but I always took Oz along with me wherever we moved, so I was never lonely.
"Well, I'm glad you made me dress up."
We were introduced to each of Glenda's girls, and each one curtsied. It felt like being home in Helium, except that these girls weren't slaves in any sense, no indentures. When I stopped to think about it, I couldn't recall that money was ever used in Oz. It didn't have an economy. The girls were beautifully dressed, each differently, but each dress was predominantly the color of her own country. Munchkin blue, Gillikin purple, Winky yellow or gold, a few in green. One girl waiting to be introduced was in red, Quadling, of course, where we were. Looked familiar. That glossy black hair and dark skin with rosy cheeks. I said to her, "Is your name Fig?" She was startled. "Why, yes, Your Highness. How did you know?" She dropped a curtsy quickly. "I've been here before. Ask Captain Bill. I'm not Your Highness. I'm just Didi. Do you have a friend named Larlo?"
Yes, Didi. But she's not here now. She's at the college of Professor Wogglebug."
Then she had to hurry to get back in her place in line. I made a mental note to tell Tira about it someday. I can't tell all about everyone we met at Glenda's palace. There were too many, and more kept arriving. Everyone seemed to expect us and seemed pleased to see us. Pop did not go stark raving mad when he met the Scarecrow, because he was already deep in conversation with Professor Wogglebug and with Oz the Great, royal wizard to Queen Ozma. In fact, Pop was just barely polite about it, shook hands and said,
"How do you do, Mr. Scarecrow?"
and went right on talking to H.M. Wogglebug T.E. and the wizard. I'm not sure he even looked at the Scarecrow. He was saying,
"You put it very neatly, Professor. I wish my friend Professor Mobius Taurus were here to hear your formulation of it. If we set alpha equal to zero, it is obvious that..."
I wandered off then, because when Pop says, "It is obvious that," what is really obvious is that Didi should leave. Once I pointed out to him that he had filled up 5 pages proving that zero equals zero. He sulked for days. Since then, I've avoided his field of mathematics, and he's not interested in the simple field I'm in, other than to shove calculations at me sometimes and ask me to program them and push them through a computer. Dinner was in the banquet hall, and the crowd of guests exactly filled it, which of course it would, because Glenda's banquet hall is always just the right size for the number of persons eating there, or there and not eating, as the case may be. For Jack Pumpkinhead, TikTok, the Tin Woodman, the Sawhorse, the Scarecrow, and other people who didn't eat were seated there too. And also people who weren't people but were animal people. The Cowardly Lion, the Hungry Tiger, the Woozy, the King of the Flying Monkeys, Hank, Toto, and a beautiful long-haired cat with supercilious manners. Glenda the Good was seated at the head of the table at one end, and Queen Ozma of Oz was at the head of the table at the other end. Pop was on Glenda's right, and Zebediah was on Ozma's right. The Wizard of Oz was on Glenda's left, and Professor Wogglebug was on Ozma's left. Aunt Hilda and I were opposite each other at the middle of the long table. She had the Tin Woodman on one side,
and the Scarecrow on the other, and was doing her best to charm both of them, and both were trying to charm her, and all three were succeeding. I had three dinner companions. I had started out with two, the Cowardly Lion and the Hungry Tiger. The lion ate what the others who ate did, but the tiger had a bowl of cornflakes the size of a small washtub and ate from it very daintily with a spoon to match the bowl. The Cowardly Lion and I had just started on our seafood cocktails when this cat brushed against my leg to get my attention, looked up and said, "You smell like a cat person. Make me a lap. I'm coming up." And jumped. I asked, "Eureka, do you have Dorothy's permission?" "What a silly way to talk. Dorothy has to get my permission. Feed me the lobster first, then the shrimp. You may have the last piece of shrimp for yourself." The Hungry Tiger put down his big spoon and said,
"Highness, may I abate this nuisance for you?" "Don't trouble yourself, old boy," the lion said. "I'll bite it instead, in one bite. But do please pass the Tabasco sauce. Cats have so little taste."
"Pay no attention to those peasants, wench, and get on with the lobster. Animals should not be allowed to eat at the table."
"Look who is calling whom an animal,"
growled the Cowardly Lion.
"It's not an animal, Leo,"
the Hungry Tiger objected.
"It's an insect. Highness, I'm a vegetarian usually, but I would be happy to break over this one and slice it into my cornflakes. Shall I?"
"Dorothy wouldn't like it, Raja."
"You have a point, ma'am. Shall I ask Toto to chase it out?"
"Eureka may stay. I don't mind."
"Wench, the correct answer is I am honored. Ignore these jungle beasts. They are not cats. Be it known, Felis domesticus has been civilized more generations than all you lesser breeds combined. As my serene ancestress, Bubastis, goddess of the Nile, was wont to say, where cat is civilization. Hurry up with that lobster."
So I hurried. Eureka accepted each bit daintily, barely flicking my fingertips with her scratchy tongue. At last she averted her mouth.
"Don't overdo it. I'll tell you when I require more. Scratch behind my left ear, gently. I shall sing, then I shall sleep. Maintain a respectful silence."
I did as ordered. Eureka purred very loudly. As the buzzing gave way to soft snores, I slowly stopped scratching. I had to eat with one hand then, as the other was needed to keep her from falling. As Aunt Hilda has placed a full record of that evening in Gay by interviewing all of us and combining it, I will stick to parts that mattered. After the rest had gone home or retired to their rooms, we four were invited into the library. It was smaller than it had been, cozy, as Glenda's girls had gone to their rooms. Glenda was at her great book of records as we were ushered in. She smiled and bowed without getting up as we sat down.
"Friends," she said, "Doctor, Captain, Princess Hilda, and Dee Dee. I will save time by telling you that, during the dancing, I conferred with Ozma, the wizard, and Professor Wogglebug. I had already studied the records of your strange adventures and read a resume to them before we discussed your problems. First, let me say that Ozma repeats her invitation. All of you are welcome to stay here forever. You will find hospitality wherever you go. Dee Dee, of course, knows this, and Princess Hilda knows it too, although she is not quite as sure of it as Dee Dee is. But to reassure you gentlemen, the wizard and I have made the land of Oz 1/4 inch wider in all directions, a change too small to be noticed. But you, Doctor, as a geometer, will recognize that this provides ample Lebensraum for 4 more good people, as well as for your sky chariot, Miss Gay Deceiver. 1/4 inch, Captain, is 6 35/100 millimeters. While we were about it, on the advice of Professor Wogglebug, we made 1 small change in Miss Gay Deceiver. Zebediah gave a start and looked very upset.
Of course, Gay was his sweetheart long before I was. He took care of her just as carefully as he took care of me. But he should have trusted Glinda. Glinda smiled warmly at him.
Don't be alarmed, Captain. No harm has been done to the structural integrity or the functioning of your beloved craft. When you notice it, you will notice it. If you do not like the change, all you need to do is to say aloud, Glinda, change Miss Gay Deceiver back the way she was. I will read your wish here in my book and will carry out your wish. But I do not think that you will ask me to do this. That is not a prophecy. A good witch does not prophesy. But it is my firm opinion. Now to major matters. There are no Panki in Oz. Should one ever be so foolish as to come here, I would know it at once from my book, and it would be ejected into the deadly desert. Concerning what would happen to it there, the less said, the better. But evil is not tolerated in Oz. As to the problem of Panki in your home world, it does not lie in Ozma's jurisdiction. My own powers are very limited there. While my great book of records tells me what happens there, it does not distinguish between Panki disguised as human beings and human beings who, by their own nature, are evil. I could cast a spell over all four of you, which would keep you away from them. Do you wish that?
Pop glanced at Zebediah. My husband said,
Just a moment, Glinda the Good. I don't know much about spells. Just what does that mean?
Spells are always literal, Captain. That's why they can cause so much trouble. I rarely use them. This one means what I said. You would be kept away from any Pankera.
In that case, we couldn't recognize one, could we? Or get close enough to destroy it?
I think you would have to devise a way to do both at a distance. Spells do not reason, Captain. Like computers, they operate literally.
Could they recognize us? Booby-trap us? Bomb us?
I do not know, Captain. My book records only what they have done, not what they may do. Even then, as I have said, the records do not unmask a disguised Pankera. Therefore, I know very little about them. Do you wish the spell? You need not decide at once. If you remain in Oz, you won't need it.
I blurted out, We ought to stay here.
Glinda smiled at me, but it was not a happy smile. Dear Dee Dee, you have decided not to have your baby?
Huh? I mean, excuse me, Glinda?
You have been in Fairyland more than the others. You know that your little girl will not be born here, just as no one ever dies here.
Aunt Hilda spoke up so quickly I couldn't get a word in. Glinda, thank you very much, but I will not be staying. I gulped. I won't be staying either, Aunt Glinda. I didn't look at Zebediah.
So I strongly suspected. Do you want my advice, dear?
Yes, certainly.
Having decided to be a woman, and not a little girl like Dorothy or Trot, leave here quickly, lest you be tempted to stay in Fairyland forever.
Pop glanced at Zebediah, then said,
Madam Glinda, we'll be leaving in the morning. We are grateful for your lavish hospitality, but I think that is best.
I think so too, Doctor. But remember, Ozma's invitation stands. When you are weary of the outside world, come here for a holiday, and by all means bring your children. Children are happy here and never get hurt. Oz was designed for children.
We will. We certainly will.
Is there anything more to discuss? If not,
just a second, put in Aunt Hilda. You told Dee Dee. Will you tell me? Glinda smiled.
My book states that you are growing a boy.
34. Zebediah. I didn't sleep with Dee Dee that night. I didn't plan it that way, it just happened. A footman showed me to a room. Dee Dee and Hilda were still standing at the top of the stairs. More magical stairs. Okay, as long as you don't look down. and talking excitedly with Jake nearby. When I saw that the room had only a single bed, not even twin beds, the footman had vanished. When I stepped outside, so had Dee Dee and Hilda and Jake, and the upper hall was dark. So I said a word one mustn't use in Oz and went back into my assigned room. Even a single bed looked inviting. It had been a long day. I went to sleep at once. Glinda had breakfast with us in what seemed to be the banquet hall, considerably shrunken. The food in Helium was wonderful, but I had almost forgotten how good ham and eggs and toast and fresh orange juice can be. I drank 3 cups of coffee and felt ready to wrestle alligators. Glinda kissed Dee Dee and Hilda goodbye at the top of those Escher steps, and Jake and I bent over her hands. She wished us good luck, which probably counted for more from her. Oz may not be a place to live, but it was a wonderful place to visit. Once we entered the woods, the gals took off their shoes. Gay Deceiver looked good in the morning sunlight. TikTok was standing at her nose.
"Good morning," he said. "I have been conversing with Miss Gay Deceiver all night. She is a very smart girl. Howdy, Zeb."
"Howdy, Gay. What have I told you about picking up strange men?"
"You've told me nothing, Zeb. And TikTok is not a strange man. He is a gentleman, which is more than I can say for some people." "Truly, Captain, I meant no impropriety."
"Just kidding, folks. Thanks for keeping Gay company, TikTok."
"It was a pleasure and a privilege. I arranged with the night watchman to wind me up each hour on the hour in order that our conversation be not abruptly terminated."
"Smart of you. Thanks again, and we'll see you again. We'll be back for a visit, first chance. Gay, open up."
"You didn't say please,"
my autopilot answered, but she opened her doors.
"I am delighted to hear that you are returning. Miss Gay Deceiver and I have much in common."
"So I see. All hands, man the car and prepare for space. Jake, I think we had better wear flight suits this time. We don't know where we'll pop out next."
"Captain, I agree."
Sharpie said goodbye to TikTok, went inside. Dee Dee not only said goodbye, but kissed his copper cheek. I'm sure Dee Dee would kiss a pig if the pig would hold still for it. And if he didn't, I would turn him into sausage. Kissing Dee Dee is a treat not to be scorned. Hilda reappeared, still in evening gown.
"Dee Dee, come in here. Hurry."
I shook hands with TikTok, odd, and suggested that he back off a little. Then I went inside. No sign of our wives. I called to them. "Shake it up in there. I want my jumpsuit." Dee Dee called out.
"Zebediah, wiggle your way through the bulkhead."
"I can't change my clothes back there."
"Please, dear, I need you."
When Dee Dee says she needs me, I go. But I got out of that fancy white shirt and scarlet sash first, cramped back there. So I wiggled through, and the space didn't seem as cramped as it had been when I was working on it in the Jadara's garden. I could almost stand up. "Where are you?"
"In here, portside,"
came Dee Dee's somewhat muffled voice. I turned around, banging my head on the overhead, and found a door where a door shouldn't be. I had to stoop quite a lot to get through it, but once through it, I could stand up. A small room, slightly bigger than a telephone booth, a door aft, a door forward, Sunbonnet Sue to the left, Buster Brown to the right. Dee Dee opened the door on the left.
"Come look."
A luxurious dressing room and bathroom for ladies.
"It's the same one as in the welcome cottage," said Dee Dee, "except that the window is closed and frosted. It doesn't open, but the air is fresh."
I said, "Hmm." Then I added, "Well, well." I was just filled with witty comments, but I didn't have anything for an encore, so I checked out Buster Brown. Yes, the same bathroom that Jake and I had used the day before, not as fancy as the ladies' room and a shower instead of a tub. Well, maybe the gals would let me use their tub occasionally. When you're tired, a hot soak beats a shower. Jake stuck his head in. I said, "Well, Professor, give me the benefit of your wisdom."
"Zeb, I'm fresh out."
"Co-pilot, your advice, please. Is this craft ready for space?"
"Captain, I don't know."
"Let's check the outside. Carefully." We did. We went over the Minoque shell with eyes on figures, both port and starboard. That car was absolutely unblemished. Outside. But from the opened doors, I heard the sound, somewhat muffled, of a toilet flushing. Nevertheless, 10 minutes later, we were settling into our seats. I asked, "Did anyone leave anything in our new annex?"
"Both Hilda and I hung up our dresses. There's plenty of hanging space."
"Dee Dee, do you realize that that confounded magical space warp will probably go back wherever it came from the instant we leave here?"
"Wanna bet? Glinda the Good wouldn't pull that sort of a trick on us."
"It's your dress, dear. But don't anyone leave anything essential in there during maneuvers. Standing order, now and forever. Gay, are you going to go on being talkative on your own?"
"Zeb, once I'm back on watch, I'll be strictly business, but a girl is entitled to a night out once in a while."
"You're a smart girl, Gay."
"So TikTok told me, Zeb. Over."
"Over and out, Gay. All hands, report readiness for space."
"I took a pill, Captain. Seatbelt tight." "Seatbelt fastened, Zebediah, and I fastened all three bathroom doors."
"Belt fastened, starboard door seal checked."
"Port door seal checked. Co-pilot, set transition, H-axis, 100,000 clicks upward."
100,000 kilometers straight up. Minimum range scale, vernier setting 4. Set.
Execute. I tilted her nose down right after transit. Out the screen was a very Earth-like planet, but I couldn't recognize any continental shapes. Sort of murky all over. "Science officer, hand the co-pilot the binocs, then unstrap and find out whether or not our new wing is still attached."
"Aye, aye, Captain Zebby."
Jake inspected carefully by binoculars.
"Captain, I can make out Oz very easily, but it's hazy everywhere else."
He handed me the glasses. "Jake, as soon as your eyes adjust, take a look at the stars. I inspected the planet myself. I thought I could make out polar caps, but there was haze everywhere but Oz. By focusing carefully, I could see Emerald City."
Jake said, "Captain, it's our own universe."
"It is, eh? On which side of Orion is the bull?"
"Why, on Jesus, Allah, and Zoroaster, it's turned inside out."
"Yeah, but not the way that other inside out place was. Like Oz itself, east for west. Dee Dee, is there anything odd about duration here?"
"Doesn't feel odd, but I'm going to have to reset my head sometime or someplace. I realize we are on a different time axis. But it's been over a century since those three little girls moved to Oz. I don't know what it feels like to them, and I carefully didn't ask. Did anybody else notice that there were no clocks and no calendars?" "Captain Zebby?"
"Yes, Hilda?"
"Our new plumbing works just dandy, though I can't see how. But be careful going in there during free fall, because it's not free fall beyond the first door. The floor is down. One gravity, it feels like. I did a spectacular somersault."
"Hilda, my love, are you hurt?"
"Not a bit, Jacob, but next time I'll hang on to something and pull myself down even with the deck and slither in."
"Science officer, secure those doors, return to your seat and strap down. Co-pilot, once Hilda reports, set your next rotation by your schedule."
"I fastened the doors as I came out, or back in, maybe, and now I'm dogging the bulkhead door. Okay, I'm strapping down, but where are the binoculars?"
Dee Dee stowed them. "All hands, stand by to rotate."
"Rotation set, Captain."
"Execute." another totally black one. I said, Dee Dee, I'm going to tumble first, then it's your turn to check the new plumbing.
It is not Dee Dee's turn. I'm science officer, and that includes hygiene, plumbing, and space warps.
Jake, do you have any influence over her?
Not much, Captain.
I switched out the instrument lights. We went through one full tumbling pigeon. Null report from everyone. So I switched back on the instrument lights and added the cabin lights. Science officer, check our time-space warp. But do be careful, Sharpie. Set up the next rotation, Jake. It's universe number 8 coming up, isn't it? Third of the second group?
Correct, Skipper. One more after that, and we return to home base. Near Mars, I mean. Rotation set, ready to go once Hilda is in her seat and strapped down.
Sharpie was back fairly promptly.
I stopped to brush my teeth. Didn't have a chance to after breakfast. Cap'n Zebby, it's awful dark outside, but there is sunlight coming in through both bathroom windows. Riddle me that.
She added,
seatbelt fastened, all three doors fastened.
You riddle it. You're the science officer. Stand by to rotate. Execute. I got her leveled out rather hastily. Co-pilot, H above G and pressure.
1,300 clicks, 919 millibars.
Too close. Jake, any more of those hairbreadth misses and I'm going to retire and take up tatting. Where are we? I can't see a damn thing. I'm on instruments.
We're over water, Captain, with a light fog. Not very thick, I can see a shoreline to starboard.
I turned gay to the right, picked out the shoreline myself, was able to shift visual. I've held IFR rating for years, but I'm always easier with a horizon I can see. Gay's wings were already spread. I held her on an easy 100 knots and placed her on automatic. We leave this kite sealed for now. I won't check the air without going up pretty high.
Sail ho!
Where away, Sharpie?
On the starboard bow and down on the water, of course. A real sail. A sailing ship.
Darn if it wasn't. A square rigger right out of the 18th century, with a high forecastle and stern castle. I dipped down for a better look. I wasn't afraid of it. People who sailed ships like that didn't use guided missiles, or so I kept telling myself. It was a pretty sight. I dropped the starboard wing so that we could have a good look. But we must have been a pretty sight to them, for there were sailors rushing around and the helmsman apparently lost his senses completely. He let her get away from him and she fell into irons, with her canvas flapping foolishly. Not wanting to get the poor fellow keel-hauled, I leveled off and got out of there, headed for land. Jake said,
Good God, Captain, you scared me silly.
Why, Jake? They were scared, sure, but surely you aren't scared of black powder cannon.
No, I'm not, but you almost put the wing on this side into the water.
Don't be silly, Jake. I was above 200 meters. Well, maybe 150 when I did that steep turn to let us see better, but plenty of room.
Take a look at your altimeter and pressure.
I looked. The radar altimeter stated that we were 19 meters above the water. I had to change scales to read it closely. Pressure showed slightly over 1,000 millibars, a sea level high. So I promptly took us up to 1,000 meters. Co-pilot, how did I make that error? I sure don't want to make it again.
I don't know, Captain. I can see that wingtip. You can't from your seat. When it looked to me as if you might cut the water, I looked at the instruments. I was about to yell when you straightened out.
Jake, I was flying sea to my pants by the ship's masts. I would swear I never got within 300 meters of that ship on the slant. That would put me plenty high up for a calm day. That water barely had white caps.
Sharpie asked, Don't you recognize the place, Captain Zebby?
Sharpie, don't tell me you've been here before.
Only in books, Zebby, but several times in books. A child's version in about third grade, then a more detailed version in junior high. Then I finally laid hands on the complete, unexpurgated 18th century version, which was pretty racy for the age I was then. I still find it pleasantly bawdy.
Sharpie, whatever are you talking about? Jake answered me.
Captain, what sort of ship could cause you to think you were high in the air when in fact you were about to pole vault into the sea on your starboard wing?
I give up.
One manned by sailors 15 centimeters high.
I thought about it. We were approaching land now. I carefully climbed to 1,000 clicks by instrument and told Gay to hold us there, although it seemed much higher. If any of you run across Dean Swift, will you please give him a swift kick in the rump for me?
Didi asked, Zebediah, do you suppose the land of the giants, Brobdingnag, is on the same continent?
I hope not.
Why not, dear? It should be fun.
Because we don't have time to waste on either Lilliputians or giants. Neither would have obstetricians able to take care of you two. And the level of medical art would be 18th century. Jake, get ready to take us up 100,000 clicks. Get set to rotate immediately thereafter. Does anyone have any rational theory about what has been happening to us? Or am I simply struggling with my straitjacket in our friendly neighborhood shrink factory?
I have a theory of sorts, Zebby.
Give, Sharpie.
Don't laugh, because as I recall, you yourself told me that you and Jacob had discussed the heart of it, the idea that human thought existed as quanta. I don't know quanta from Qantas Airlines, but I've been told that a quantum is an indivisible unit. You told me that you and Jacob discussed the possibility that imagination had its own sort of indivisible units, or quanta. You called them fictions, or was it ficta? Either way, the notion was that every story ever told, or to be told, if there is a difference, existed in reality somewhere in the number of the beast.
But Hilda, my love, that was merely abstract mathematics.
Jacob, Mobius Taras regarded this car as abstract mathematics, until he rode in it. And didn't you tell me that the human body itself is merely complex equations of waveforms? That was when I bit you. I don't mind being a wave format. Waves are pretty. I beat you for using the adverb merely.
Zebediah, there is a city over on the left, not very far. Can't we look at it before we leave here?
Didi, I'm going to make you decide that yourself. You saw what a panic we caused in that toy-sized ship. Imagine yourself to be not more than 14 centimeters tall and living in that city. Along comes a great sky monster and dives on your city. Would you like it? How many will faint? How many will die of heart failure? How many of those little people are you willing to kill to satisfy your curiosity? I added, to those little people we are monsters worse than Panky.
Oh dear, you're right, Zebediah. Dismally right. Let's get out of here.
Co-pilot, set to transit straight up 100,000 clicks.
Transition H-axis positive. Vernier 4 set.
Execute, I continued. We can sit here for a while. We're too far away to frighten them or even be seen. Sharpie, you have the floor. We aren't going anywhere until we've heard your theory and discussed it. Jake, I'm not sure I'm willing to risk another rotation anyhow. I've been scared silly 4 times by narrow escapes and rotations. I know how to translate safely from one Earth analog to the next. Just use plenty of elbow room. But these rotations are making me white-haired. I can't plan for elbow room, and I'm not getting it. The laws of chance are going to catch up with me, when I thought the odds were stacked strongly in our favor.
Zebby, I don't think the laws of chance have anything to do with it. I don't think we have been in any danger in any rotation.
So? Sharpie, you know how to drive a duo. I'm about to swap seats with you. As quickly as I can move this seat forward, it's maximum so that you can reach all its controls.
No, I...
Chicken.
Zebby, I don't have your ESP for danger. I'll take a watch at the controls if you tell me to, although I certainly don't have your skill at flying. But I'll just be the pilot on watch. You must be captain, because your hunches are part of why I say that I don't think the so-called laws of chance are relevant.
Sharpie, statistical laws are the most firmly established of all natural laws.
Do they apply in the Land of Oz?
Damned if I know. Touché.
captain, Hilda has not expressed it as a mathematician would. Nevertheless, I agree with her. To call the equations used in statistics in our home universe laws of nature is a grave misnomer. Those equations measure the degree of our ignorance. When I flip a coin and say that the chance of heads or tails is 50-50, I am simply declaring total ignorance as to the outcome. But if I knew all the conditions, I don't, the outcome could be pre-calculated by macro mechanics. But we have already experienced at least two universes having physical laws quite unlike those of our home universe. 3, Jacob. Lilliput makes 3. I don't quite follow you, my dear. The cube square law that runs all through biology does not apply here. It has its own. I can state flatly that a human brain can't be placed in a space the size of a thimble by our laws, but we're getting away from the theory Zebby told me to expound. Shall I go on?
Yes, I ruled. Everybody shut up, but Sharpie. I've been the worst offender. I'm zipping my lip. Sharpie, proceed.
All right. It's not chance that we have been in three universes, Barsoom, the Land of Oz, and Lilliput, in less than 24 hours, isn't it, Didi? Less than 16, Aunt Hilda, from leaving the Bay of Blood to arriving here? Thanks, hun. And that those three, all, are fictional universes. I have to call them that for lack of a better word, well known to each of us. By chance, and again, I don't have a good word, but it's not chance, all four of us are addicted to fanciful stories. Fantasy. Science fiction. Call it what you wish. But we all like the same sort of stories. How many of us like detective stories?
Some of them, not all of them, said Didi.
My sole loyalty is to Sherlock Holmes, said Hilda's husband. Waste of time. The puzzles are too simple. The writing is usually atrocious. I prefer mathematics.
I'd like to try an experiment, Hilda went on. All of us write down the 20 stories you have enjoyed the most, as nearly as you can think of them, or groups of related stories. The Oz books would count as one, so would the Edgar Rice Burroughs Mars series, and so would the 4 voyages of Gulliver's Travels. But don't list those 3. We've been there. And don't discuss it or compare notes. Make them stories you've read and reread till you wore out the books. And if anybody puts down War and Peace, I'll know he's cheated. Some people read that one once, hardly anyone reads it twice, and most people bog down unless it's a much-cut version. Put down things you reread for pleasure when you are too tired to tackle a new book.
She added,
anybody need pencil and paper?
Sharpie, is it cheating to ask how you mean to use this?
No, Cap'n Zebby. If my theory is right, the next time we rotate and find ourselves close to a planet, it will turn out to be the scene of a story or group of stories that appears on all 4 lists. And we'll be high enough that you will have plenty of time to level off Gay Deceiver, but close enough that we can ground if we want to. But we will never rotate into a mass or into any other danger that you and Jacob can't handle by some sort of scram. This isn't chance. We haven't been dealing with chance. Barsoom startled me. The Land of Oz surprised me a little, but Lilliput didn't surprise me at all. I expected it, or at least some place that all of us knew through stories.
How about the empty universes?
I don't know. Maybe they are places about which stories will be written, or maybe the stories have already been told, but they aren't stories that are favorites of us four, so we don't emerge close to their scenes. But those are just guesses. No data. So far as my theory is concerned, such universes are null. They don't count one way or the other. We'll find our universes.
Sharpie, you have just invented multi-person solipsism. I didn't think it was mathematically possible. Captain, everything is mathematically possible. Mathematics has no content.
Thanks, Jacob. Zebby, solipsism is a buzzword. I'm simply saying that we've stumbled onto the door in the wall, the one that leads to the land of heart's desire. I don't know how we did it, and my buttonhead can't use fancy philosophical rationalizations. I see a pattern, that's all. I'm not trying to explain it. It just is.
How does that hollow world fit your theory?
Well, Didi called it Pellucidar. It was, but I've read dozens of stories about worlds underground, and I'll bet everyone else here has too. Jules Verne, S. Fowler Wright,
H.G. Wells, C.L. Moore, Lovecraft. All the great masters of fantasy have taken a crack at it one or more times. Please, can we stop talking and work on those lists? I realize that we don't fall very fast way out here, but I would like to have all four lists before we rotate again. We all got silently to work. I changed attitude so that Lilliput's planet was dead ahead and told Gay to hold it there so I'd notice any gross change in distance. The planet looked very small, as if we were 1,000,000 kilometers out from it, rather than 100,000, which was only reasonable. I wrote down the Dorsai yarns. At last, Didi announced, "I'm through, Anhillbilly." She passed over her list, kept quiet. Soon after, her father passed back his list. "Don't count those I've lined out, dear. I had trouble holding it down to 20.
20 is arbitrary, Jacob. I can leave the extras in."
"No, dear. After careful thought, I'm sure that the four I eliminated, much as I like them, do not stand as high in my favor as the 20 I retained." After a short wait, I announced, "Sharpie, I'm stuck at 17. Got a baker's dozen more in mind, but no real choice among them."
17 will do, if they are your prime favorites."
"They are." Hilda accepted my list, ran her gaze down it.
"A psychoanalyst would have a wonderful time with these four lists."
"Wait a half. Sharpie, I told the truth. If you're going to let a shrink see those lists, I want mine back, now."
"Zebby, darling, I wouldn't do that to you or any of us. I'm all three of the three little monkeys. But doesn't anyone mind if I copy off the ones I haven't read? I apparently missed some goodies."
No one objected. She added,
"I need a few minutes to tally the score."
"Take as long as you like," I said. "Need help?"
"No, and it won't take long. I've tallied a one, after all, on my list. I've checked Didi's against mine and tallied a 2 wherever they matched, and added to the bottom of my list, with one vote tallied against each. Those she picked, but I didn't. Not very many, Didi. Your taste and mine almost match. Now I'm doing the same with Jacob's list, and tallying 3s and 2s and 1s. Then Zebby, and we'll wind up with a 4-vote list, unanimous, and a list of stories or related stories with 3 votes each, and a list with 2, and a list with 1.
Hilda kept very busy for some minutes, then took a fresh sheet, listed the stories or story groups that had been picked by all of us, folded it 3 times.
"This should be in a sealed envelope to establish my reputation as a fortune teller. Captain Zebby, there are 9 soi-disant fictional universes listed. Any close approach we make by rotation should be near 1 of 5 of them, because I have lined out the 4 we have already visited."
4? You included Pellucidar? I didn't vote for it."
"No, Cap'n. Pellucidar got only 2 votes. I stick to my theory that the inside-out world is a composite scene of all underground fantasies, but our vote identified that 3rd universe, the blinding lights, the one that worried you about radiation."
"The hell you say?"
"Or I think it did. Dr. Isaac Asimov's Nightfall. Only he wasn't a doctor then, he wrote it in his teens. I rather expected his foundation stories to make it, but got only 3 votes. Too bad, because his library planet might have been able to tell us what the Panki are, where they come from, and how to beat them." "My fault, Aunt Hillbilly. Pop told us I should read that series, but I got caught up in the pressure of work and never did. I'm sorry."
"Sharpie, dear, better hand that list to Didi. She won't peek. Whereas I might. Co-pilot, shall I rotate? The science officer has me half convinced that we can get away with it, so let's do it before I lose my nerve. 4th and last universe in the 2nd group, isn't it?" "Yes, Captain. Verniers set to rotate." "Anybody as chicken as I am, speak now or forever hold your peace. Isn't anybody going to get me out of this? Execute." 35. Zebediah. Gay Deceiver was right side up and no more than 500 meters above a sunlit, gentle countryside. I moved quickly, set her to cruise slowly in a circle. "Are we back on Oz?"
Looks like it to me. Jake, check your setting.
Not Oz, Captain. Impossible. Different universe. I've stuck to the schedule.
Sharpie?
If it's one of the five, and it ought to be, then it's...
Hilda broke off, wrote a word on the bottom of a fresh sheet, tore it off, folded it, and handed it to me.
Stick this in your pocket. Look at it later. This place is safe.
I tucked it away. Well, I'll ground us in that meadow ahead. We'll check the air while we're down. Safer. The field was small. I covered, then squatted her in. Didi?
Yes, sir?
Worked out that new scram program?
I think so. One to do just what you've been doing. Take GD straight up 100,000 clicks, but do it in two words instead of setting dials. Do it in total darkness if you wish, or with eyes dazzled or anything. As long as any of the four of us is able to get out two syllables, we'll be able to get far enough away from trouble that we'll have time to work out what to do next.
Can you program it orally before I open a door?
I think so, Zebediah. But in cutting it to two syllables, I've cut out all preliminaries. If she's asleep, GD will wake up and do it at once. We'll all have to be careful not to say those two syllables unless we mean it.
Bad deal if her doors are open. Can you program not to let that happen?
Yes, sir.
Okay, program it. Jake, set up the same thing on your dials as a backup. Meanwhile, I'm going to give the plumbing a field test. Don't touch the doors till I get back. Squeeze past me, honey, and take my seat. I returned in a few minutes. Our magic space warp is still with us and functioning, and don't ask me why or I'll scream. New program inserted?
Yes, sir. On tell me three times memory and protected against execution without the doors being closed and locked. I've written down the magic words. Pop and Aunt Hilda know them. Don't read them aloud. Here.
Didi handed me a scrap of paper. On it was Gay Bounce. Just that?
It's the shortest program I can work out for an emergency, I think. The only hazard is never to use those two syllables casually, but I can wipe it and make it more complex if you wish.
As long as it can't work with the doors open, it should be okay. Its shortness may save our necks sometime. Sharpie, it's my turn to be Pioneer Mother and Canary. We're on the ground. Everybody, hold your breath. I'm going to sniff the outside air.
Captain Zebby, this planet is Earth-like to 9 decimal places.
Which gives me a cheap chance to play hero. Pipe down and hold your breath. I cautiously opened the door a crack by hand. Sniffed. I feel okay, I think. Anybody woozy?
Open the door wide, Zebby. This place is safe.
I did so and stepped out into a field of daisies. The others followed me through the port side door. It certainly seemed safe. Quiet, warm, peaceful, a meadow bounded by a hedgerow. Suddenly a white rabbit came running past, headed for the hedge. He barely paused, pulled a watch from his waistcoat pocket, glanced at it, then moaned, oh dear, I shall be too late, and ran even faster. Didi started after him. Didi, I yelled. She stopped short.
But I must find the hole.
Then keep your eye on her. But you're not going down the rabbit hole.
On whom?
Didi turned back toward the hedgerow. A little girl in a pinafore was hurrying toward the spot where the rabbit had disappeared.
Oh, but it didn't hurt her to go down the hole, Zebediah. You know it didn't.
No, but Alice got in lots of difficulties before she got out. We haven't time for that. This is not a place where we can stay.
Why not?
Because England in mid-19th century did not have advanced medicine.
Zebby, put in Hilda, this isn't England. Look in your pocket. The scrap of paper I handed you.
I unfolded the bit of paper. Read, Wonderland. Just so, I agreed and handed it to my wife. But the background is modeled on England sometime in the 1860s. It either has no medicine at all, like Oz, or it has pre-Pasteur medicine. possibly even pre-Semmelweis practices, since England tended to be cautious about adopting newfangled notions from the continent. Dee Dee, do you want to die from childbed fever?
No, I want to go to the mad tea party.
We can have a mad tea party right here. I went mad several universes back, and it's time for lunch anyhow. Sharpie, you win the Order of Nostradamus with Diamond Cluster. It will be awarded as soon as possible. May I ask you two questions?
One may always ask.
Is H.P. Lovecraft on that list?
He got only one vote, Zebby. Yours.
Cthulhu be thanked. Sharpie, his stories fascinate me the way snakes are said to fascinate birds. But I would rather be trapped with the King in Yellow than be caught up in any of the worlds in Necronomicon. Did any horrids get four votes?
No, dear. The rest of us all prefer happy endings.
So do I, so do I. Especially when I'm in it. Did Heinlein get his name in the hat?
Four votes, but split. Two for his future history, two for Stranger in a Strange Land. So, he didn't make it.
Well, I didn't vote for Stranger, and I'll refrain from embarrassing anyone by asking who did. My God, the things some writers will do for money.
Samuel Johnson said that anyone who wrote for any other reason was a fool.
Johnson was a fat, pompous, gluttonous, dirty old fool who would have faded into the obscurity he so richly deserved had he not been followed around by a spit-licking sycophant. Better spell that psycho. I added, did Paul Anderson get in? Or Niven?
Zebby, that's far more than two questions.
I haven't even reached the second question, which is, what do we have for lunch? Or a mad tea party?
Surprise! Glinda had a packed picnic basket placed in our dressing room.
I didn't see it.
You didn't look in the wardrobe. It was the first thing I checked on after we left Oz.
Hilda grinned.
Can sandwiches from Oz be eaten in Wonderland, or will they softly and silently vanish away?
Be off, or I'll kick you downstairs. Several hundred calories later, Dee Dee noticed a young man hovering nearby. He seemed to want to speak to them, but was too diffident to do so. She promptly jumped up, trotted toward him.
The Reverend Mr. Dodgson, is it not? I'm Mrs. Zebediah Carter.
He quickly removed his straw boater, his only concession to the weather.
Mr. Dodgson, yes, Mrs. Carter, have we met?
A long time ago, before I was married, but it doesn't matter. You were looking for Alice, were you not?
Dear me, why, yes, I am, but how?
I saw her. She went down the rabbit hole.
Dodgson looked relieved.
Then she is perfectly safe, and she will be back soon enough. I promised to return her and her sisters to Christchurch before dark.
You did. I mean, you will. Same thing, depending on the coordinates selected. Come meet my family. Have you had luncheon?
Oh, I say, I don't mean to intrude.
You aren't intruding. There's plenty left.
Dee Dee took him by the hand firmly. Since she was stronger than he was, he had no choice other than by struggling. So he came along rather awkwardly and blushing, and let go her hand hastily as soon as she loosened her grip. Jake and I got to our feet. Hilda remained in Lotus.
Aunt Hilda, this is Mr. Dodgson, lecturer in mathematics at Christ Church College, Oxford. My stepmother, Mrs. Burroughs.
How do you do, Mrs. Burroughs? Oh dear, I am intruding.
Not at all, Mr. Dodgson. Do sit down. And this is my father, Dr. Burroughs, professor of mathematics. And Mr. Dodgson, my dear husband, Captain Carter. Aunt Hilda, will you find a clean plate for Mr. Dodgson? He's been searching for Alice. He must be hungry.
The young Don visibly relaxed once formal introductions had been made, but he was still far more formal than Dee Dee intended to permit. He sat down on the turf, placed his hat carefully beside him, and said,
"Truly, Mrs. Burroughs, I've just finished tea with three little girls, sisters. One of them wandered off, and that is how I chanced by."
Dee Dee ignored his protests while she piled his plate with little sandwiches and cakes.
Hilda poured tea from a thermos jug. Thus, they nailed him down with cup and plate. Jake advised,
"Don't fight it, son, unless you really must leave this instant. Are Alice's sisters safe?"
"Why, yes, Professor. They are napping in the shade of a hayrick nearby, but..."
"Then relax and be at home. You must wait until Alice returns, in any case. What branch of mathematics do you pursue?"
"Algebraic logic, usually, sir, with some attention to its applications in geometry."
The Reverend Mr. Dodgson was seated so that he faced Gay Deceiver and sat in the shade of her port wing, but nothing in his manner showed that he had even noticed the anachronism.
"Have your studies led you into multidimensional non-Euclidean geometries?"
Dodgson blinked.
"I fear that I tend to be conservative in geometry, rather."
"Father, Mr. Dodgson doesn't work in your field. He works in mine."
Dodgson raised his eyebrows slightly but remained silent. Jake said, "I suspect that my daughter did not introduce herself fully. She is Mrs. Carter, but her maiden name is Dr. D.T. Burroughs. Her field is mathematical logic."
"And that is why I am so pleased that you are here, Mr. Dodgson. Your book, Symbolic Logic, is a milestone in our field."
"But, my dear lady, I have not written a work titled Symbolic Logic."
"I've confused things again, I'm sorry. Again, it is a matter of selection of the proper coordinates. At the end of the reign of Queen Victoria, you will have published it 5 years earlier. Is that clear?"
He answered very solemnly, "Quite clear. Then all I need do is to ask Her Majesty how much longer she is going to reign and subtract 5 years."
"That should do it. Do you like to play with Sorites?"
For the first time, he smiled. "Oh, very much."
"Shall we make up some, then trade and solve them?"
"Well, not too lengthy. I really must get back to my young charges."
"We can't stay long either. Anyone else want to play?"
No one else selected to play. Jake and Hilda went for a walk, Jake promising that they would stay in sight and Hilda cautioning Didi not to bother with tidy up until later. I stretched out on the grass with a handkerchief over my face.
"Shall we hold the incomplete statements down to groups of six?" Dodgson suggested.
"All right, but the conclusion must be true, not nonsense. Agreed?"
Both of them kept quiet while I rested. I peeked a lot. Who wouldn't? Didi was a lady for a while. Then she sprawled on her belly and chewed her pencil, having learned most of her life ago that this position facilitated thought. First, she selected the conclusion to be proved, then covered several pages with scratchwork in developing statements, incomplete in themselves, which would arrive at that and only that conclusion. Having done so, then tested them by symbolic logic, she wrote out her list of six statements, mixing them randomly, then looked up. The young mathematician was looking at her solemnly, his notepad in hand.
"Finished?"
she asked. "Just finished. Mrs. Carter, you remind me of my little friend, Alice Liddell."
"I know," she said. "That's how I recognized her. Shall we trade?"
Dodgson tore out a sheet from his pad. "This is to be solved in the first person. The conclusion applies to you."
"All right, I'll try it."
Didi read. 1. Every idea of mine that cannot be expressed as a syllogism is really ridiculous. 2. None of my ideas about bath buns are worth writing down. 3. No idea of mine that fails to come true can be expressed as a syllogism. 4. I never have any really ridiculous ideas that I do not at once refer to my solicitor. 5. My dreams are all about bath buns. 6. I never refer any idea of mine to my solicitor unless it is worth writing down. Didi read it and chortled.
"How very sweet of you. It is true, you know. All my dreams do come true."
"You solved it so quickly."
"But it's only six statements. Have you solved mine?"
I haven't read it yet. I will now. He read. 1. Everything not absolutely ugly may be kept in a drawing room. 2. Nothing that is encrusted with salt is ever quite dry. 3. Nothing should be kept in a drawing room unless it is free from damp. 4. Time-traveling machines are always kept near the sea. 5. Nothing, that is what you expect it to be, can be absolutely ugly. 6. Whatever is kept near the sea gets encrusted with salt. He blinked at the list.
The conclusion is true? He asked.
Yes. For the first time, he stared openly at Gay Deceiver.
That, then, I infer, is a time-traveling machine.
Yes, although it does several other things as well.
It is certainly not what I expected it to be, although I am not sure what I expected a time-traveling machine to be. I haven't given it much thought before today.
I pulled the handkerchief off my face. Do you want to take a ride in it, Mr. Dodson? The young Don looked wistful.
I am sorely tempted, Captain, but I am responsible for 3 little girls and cannot leave them, so I must thank you for your hospitality and bid you goodbye. Will you offer my apologies to Professor and Mrs. Burroughs and explain that duty calls me?
36. Jake. Our captain said, Titi, how does it feel to say goodbye without getting kissed? Zebediah? I didn't even make it possible. The record shows that Lewis Carroll was terrified by females over the age of puberty. If not terrified, my dear wife Hilda added, at least he did not pick them to chum with, tended to avoid them. That's why I stayed close by, Deedee Hun. If I had gone with Jake and Hilda, he would have left at once. I can't figure out how he got there in the first place, Hilda went on. Lewis Carroll was never in Wonderland. He simply wrote about it. But this is Wonderland, unless rabbits in England wear waistcoats and watches. You aren't being logical, Aunt Hilda. Who can possibly be as deeply inside a story as the person who writes it? I think I'll have to study that one. Study it later. All hands, stand by to rotate. Set it up by your schedule, co-pilot. Deedee, we're going to try your new scram. In my voice, just for drill. Co-pilot, if it works, rotate at once. That's for drill, too. Mars, isn't it? End of group. Right, Captain, I agreed. Next stop off, Mars, Universe 1. Gay, bounce! At once we were high. I pushed the execute button, and at once Mars 0 was swimming ahead of us, in half phase and looking the proper distance. Co-pilot, set rotation by schedule. First rotation of third group to 10th rotation universe, set. All hands, stand by to rotate. Execute. A quite home-like starry void, but I saw no recognizable constellations. Co-pilot, set your next rotation, then turn out the instrument lights. All hands, pigeon tumble coming up. Stand by. We went through a full somersault. No one reported anything near us, and I still saw no familiar constellations. The captain said, Science officer, mark this one as promising. He turned on the instrument lights. Ready to rotate, Jake? Set, Captain. All hands stand by to rotate. Execute. Still another star-filled universe. But to my considerable surprise, these constellations were indeed familiar. I was looking right at the Big Dipper, Ursa Major, and the Little Dipper, Ursa Minor, was in its correct place, with Polaris at the end of its handle. I hastily checked the dials. No, we couldn't possibly be in Universe Zero. Besides, Mars was missing. All hands, stand by for tumbling pigeon routine. I kept quiet while the captain took us through the familiar scanning procedure, expecting each moment to disclose at least our familiar sun. Not only did I fail to see it, but also no other celestial body was near enough to show other than as a bright point of light. However, all constellations that I observed seemed familiar, save that I confess that the sky as seen from Earth's southern hemisphere is not too familiar to me. I spotted, I thought, Crux, the Southern Cross, and both the Magellanic Clouds. I was less sure of others. But there could be no doubt about Leo and Cygnus and the Square of Pegasus and others that decorate the night sky of Arizona and anywhere in northern latitudes. Co-pilot, where are we? Apparently in our home universe, Captain. And this time Taurus is on the correct side of Orion. I noticed. Yes, but where in hell is Sol? Didi, Hilda, we seem to have mislaid the sun. Either of you see it? No, sir. No, Captain Zebby. Jake, I don't like this a little bit. Is your next rotation set? Yes, Captain, I acknowledged. I set it up at once, pursuant to standing orders. Good. Keep your finger near the button. Science officer, how does this fit your theory? I don't recall listing a fictional universe that doesn't have the solar system in it. Captain Zebby, it could fit two of the four still left, or any one of a dozen that got three votes. Especially any of that half a dozen that you might have listed. If you hadn't had a baker's dozen, I think you said, tied in your mind. Were any of that baker's dozen space travel stories, or groups of stories? Almost all of them. In that case, we could be in any of several soi-disant fictional universes that take our own universe as a frame of reference, but far enough from the sun so that it appears as second or third magnitude. That wouldn't have to be very far for the constellations to look familiar. Our sun is pretty faint as stars go. So this could be the Darkover universe, or Niven's known space, or Dr. Williamson's Legion of Space universe, or the Star Trek universe, or Anderson's World of the Polisotechnic League, or Dr. Smith's Galactic Patrol World, or several more. Did you have any of those in mind? All of them, I think, including some that I voted for, as you know. As you know, yes. Sharpie, you mentioned that there were two that this could not be. Care to name them, or is that cheating? No, it can't hurt to name them. The world of King Arthur and the Knights of the Round Table, and the world of the Hobbits, the Fellowship of the Ring. Well, if we find ourselves in either of those, we leave quickly. No obstetricians. We'll just mark them down as nice places to visit once our kids are big enough for travel. Jake, is there any point in staying here any longer?
None that I see, Captain, I answered.
I can see good reason to scram. Several of those space opera universes can be pretty sticky. I don't care to catch a photon torpedo or a vortex bomb or a negative matter projectile or anything else, just through a failure to identify ourselves promptly. All hands, stand by to rotate. Execute! This time, we weren't merely close. We were on the ground, and maybe I...
Perhaps Captain Zeb shouldn't have asked Hilda what those other two were. Possibly it affected the outcome.
I found very persuasive her theory that we were not going places at random. These were all dream universes mutually shared, but in the too solid flesh. Charging straight at us was a knight in full armor, his lance couched in attack. I think it unlikely that a lance could damage Gay Deceiver. As may be, this gentle knight was unfriendly. I did not wait for orders, but shouted, "Gay, bounce!" Sighed with relief at sudden darkness and set the next rotation at once, and hoped that the captain would not notice that I had not done so before raising my head, as his standing order required. Either he had not or chose not to mention it. The captain's next words were, "Thanks, co-pilot. You were on your toes." "Thank you, sir." Next rotation set. End of group 3. Back to the neighborhood of Mars. I suppose we might as well get on with it. All hands.
Zebediah, my daughter interrupted. Captain, I mean. Is that all that we are going to see of the round table? And King Arthur and his knights?
Didi, that wasn't one of King Arthur's knights. He was wearing full-plated mail. Didn't anyone else notice?
That's my impression, my beloved wife agreed. But I gave more attention to his shield. Field sable, argent bend sinister, in chief son proper with crown, both or...
Sir Mordred, my daughter decided. I just knew he was a baddie.
Dear, you should have hit him with your L-gun, burned him down.
And killed that beautiful beer wagon horse, a Percheron, or maybe a Clydesdale.
Titi, I do know something of the history of arms and armor. That sort of armor wasn't made earlier than the 15th century, 500 years or more after the days of King Arthur, if he ever lived.
Then why was he carrying Sir Mordred's shield?
Heraldry is not a subject I know. Sharpie, was that Sir Mordred's coat of arms?
I don't know, Captain Zebby. I simply blazoned what I saw.
But aren't you nitpicking and objecting to plate armor merely because it's anachronistic?
But history shows clearly that...
That's the point, Zebby. Camelot isn't history. It's fiction.
Our captain was silent a moment, then said, "Shut my big mouth."
Barsoom was loaded with anachronisms. So was Oz. Zebby, I venture to guess that the version of Camelot we blundered into is a patchwork of all of our concepts of King Arthur and the Round Table. I picked up most of mine from Tennyson, then revised them from end to end when I laid hands on Le Mort d'Arthur. Where did you get yours?
There is a great variety, much of it contradictory to choose from.
I haven't read either of the two you named. I guess Mark Twain gave me most of mine. At least, A Connecticut Yankee at King Arthur's Court was my major introduction. Add on some Prince Valiant, too. I don't know. I read some kids' stories, too, but The Connecticut Yankee stands out.
Jake?
I said, "Captain, there seems little doubt that there was indeed a king or a general named Arthur or Arturius or some such. But I think most people think of King Arthur from fiction, having little or no connection with the historical person, if indeed there ever was one. The Sword in the Stone and The Once and Future King are my favorites, although I've dabbled in others."
My daughter persisted. "I do believe in the Round Table. I do. We were just there. Why don't we go back and look, instead of guessing?"
"Didi," our captain said gently, "first, because you and Hilda are not going to be subjected to 5th or 9th century midwifery or whatever it is. Second, because the jolly murderous ways of that gang of roughnecks called the Knights of the Round Table are fun to read about but not to know socially. That bloke would have killed us if we hadn't been safe inside this car. Nor are people the only dangers. There would be honest-to-God dragons and wyverns and malevolent magic, not the Glinda the Good variety. We've learned so far the easy way that these alternate worlds are just as real as the one we came from. I don't want to learn it the hard way by getting suddenly dead. Jacob, said my wife, suppose this party were made up of people who don't like fanciful stories and never read them. What sort of rotation worlds would they find? I don't know, Hilda. I venture to speculate that they would visit only humdrum slice-of-life universes, indistinguishable from the real world. Correction. Substitute Universe Zero for real world. Because, as the captain pointed out, all these worlds are equally real. Jacob, why do you call our universe Universe Zero? For convenience, I suppose. That's what I'm trying to find out. Didn't you tell me once that no frame of reference is preferred over any other? In other words, each of one of the number of the beast is equally 00 in 6 axes. Well, theory requires it. Then we are simply fiction in all those other myriad universes. Or have I reasoned incorrectly? I was slow in answering. That would seem to be a necessary corollary, but I would want to give it much thought. It's a disturbing idea. The notion that we ourselves are merely figments of imagination. I'm nobody's figment, my daughter protested. I'm real, I am. Pinch me. Ouch! Hey, hillbilly, not so hard. You asked for it, hon, said the captain. My husband is a brute, and I've got a cruel stepmother just like Snow White. I mean, Cinderella. And my pop thinks I'm imaginary. But I love you all anyway because you're all I've got. If you fictional characters will all pipe down, we'll get this show back on the road. All hands stand by to rotate. Execute! Mars was where it should be. I felt more real.
37. Zebediah. Next rotation set, Captain. Starting 4th group, 13th rotation universe. Correct, Hilda?
That's what I have, Jacob. Camelot was number 12.
Check. Say when, Captain. Let's catch our breaths first. I stared out at the ruddy, barren, rugged face of Mars Zero. That piece of rock looks downright home-like. At least we're back in our own universe. I feel like the sort of tourist who tries to cover 30 countries in a 2-week vacation, then can't remember anything but the hotel rooms. Shock. Not future shock, but something like it. Continue shock?
Homesickness, said Hilda. Knowing that we can't ever go back to Snug Harbor, Zebby, it just doesn't do to think about it. Or you'll find yourself crying in your pillow. But somewhere, somewhen, somehow, we'll build another Snug Harbor. Won't we, Jacob?
Jake reached back and patted his wife's knee. We will, dearest. Dee Dee said wistfully.
I'd like to see Canacook.
Dee Dee, are you over that pioneer mother jag?
No, Zebediah. I know what we have to do. But I can get homesick too, like you, like Hilda, like everybody but Pop.
Correction, daughter. Count me in. I don't miss Logan especially, but I don't think Hilda misses California.
Not a bit.
Me neither, I agreed. I just had a rented flat there. Didn't count, no sentimental attachment. But Snug Harbor was home to all of us.
True, I didn't really hate the Panki, just feared them, until they bombed our home into a radioactive crater. Now I want to exterminate them. Utterly. Burroughs added, but we've got to find a new home first. Comfortable as this car is, we can't live in it indefinitely. Check. Science officer, your theory about rotation universes seems to be checking out on the nose. You have the list. Is there any reason to finish this schedule of rotations? Should we go directly to the Axis?
Captain Zebby, I don't know, but we haven't been wasting our time. Granted that most rotations didn't amount to more than sightseeing, if we hadn't followed Jacob's schedule, this car would not be nearly so comfortable. Do you know of another Ford Duo that has two bathrooms?
Hilda, I don't know of one that has one bathroom. Yes, our Space Warp Special is not only a comfort, beats the hell out of a honey bucket, but also it enables us to stay in space as long as our air holds out. And food. But air is the critical factor now.
I thought that recharger widget carts people made for us would pump up those air spheres.
It will, but we have to be in the atmosphere of a planet with breathable air. Could be risky. It need not be, Burroughs pointed out. I can place us in Oz or in Wonderland in seconds. Sweet air, no danger.
Gentlemen, Dee Dee and I haven't mentioned one more asset we have. Captain Zebby, would you like a banana?
There aren't any more, Hilda. I ate the last one just before I buried our garbage, while you and Dee Dee were washing dishes just before we left Wonderland.
Tell him, Dee Dee. Zebediah,